Hare Krishna. Reading from my glorious master, Hong Kong, 1970 to 1972. Prabhupada on Gandhi. The kirtan ended, and Prabhupada intoned the Prema Dwani prayers. The children and the few Chinese devotees present, they all bowed down and they replied Jai to Prabhupada's glorifications. All eyes then focused on Prabhupada. Prabhupada thanked those present for offering such a warm welcome. And after a few minutes of explaining the importance of the Krishna consciousness movement, he began criticizing Mahatma Gandhi. Of course, Gandhi is given so much respect for bringing India out of British control to independence, he said. But it was Subhas Chandra Bose who actually forced the British to grant India independence. Gandhi held up independence for 20 years with his idea of nonviolence. Subhas Chandra Bose's Indian National Army was actually the thing that made the British leave India. End of what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada spoke about Gandhi for some time and then called for questions. The Hong Kong Indians stared at Prabhupada in shocked silence. My comment. I remember thinking, why is Prabhupada talking about Gandhi? What does Gandhi have to do with Krishna consciousness? And why is he speaking of Gandhi during his first visit? Later, while we were alone, Prabhupada explained to me the details of how Subhas Chandra Bose's Indian National Army had succeeded while Gandhi's attempt had failed. Prabhupada prefaced his explanation. I will explain in case they ask you. The Indian National Army. Subhas Chandra Bose had a pact with Germany, who agreed that all Indian soldiers captured fighting for the British would be given to Bose's army. This army stationed in Burma would first train, and then it was planned, attack the British in India. It was fear of this Indian National Army, not Gandhi's pacifism, that forced the British out of India. Hearing Prabhupada's explanation of bygone, seemingly inconsequential history was as sweet as nectar, and I didn't ask him why he had spoken about it to the Hong Kong Indians. I speculated that Prabhupada wanted to attack their cherished conceptions of material reality in the hope that they would respond and he would be able to preach to them. Or perhaps Prabhupada was showing that he was not coming to Hong Kong like most sadhus to flatter and collect funds. I never asked Prabhupada directly, though, and it wasn't until years later, when I looked back at the transcripts of the talk, that his reasoning became clear. As Subhas Chandra Bose had collected an overseas army of Indians to liberate India, Prabhupada similarly wanted to collect such an overseas army of Indian Vaishnavas to one day liberate their native country. A lone question. Prabhupada's call for questions received no response, so I stood up and addressed the audience. Does anyone have a question for Prabhupada? Silence. Suddenly, a young boy said, "Who started the forest fire?" It was Lalu, a 10-year-old boy from one of our children's classes. "Prabhupada," he said, "who started the forest fire?" he repeated. Prabhupada accepted the question as serious and began preaching. Quote, "No one started the forest fire. Samsara dava nalalida loka taranaya karana ganakanatam. This material existence is a blazing fire of suffering, birth, and death. We try so hard to be happy here, but we cannot. No one starts the forest fire of material suffering. No one wants this fire to burn, but it must burn. It must burn us in every case." My comment. Months before Prabhupada's visit, I had read the story of Krishna swallowing the forest fire to our Sunday school class. When the class ended, Lalu wanted to know who had started the fire. I remember smiling and saying, "Prabhupada is coming in a few months. Why not ask him? By the time Prabhupada came, I had forgotten the incident, but Lalu had saved his question. A gift of eternal benefit. Larry Mack was a Chinese businessman working with our Spiritual Sky Incense Factory in America. I introduced him to Prabhupada. I said, "This gentleman takes care of the punk. He ships the punk," meaning the incense sticks before they have the fragrance added. "He ships the punk to Los Angeles. He has a present for you." "Prabhupada, all?" I said, "This is Larry Mack." And Larry Mack opened the jewelry box and pulled out a gold bracelet. I clasped it around Prabhupada's right wrist. "Prabhupada, what is that?" "Oh, this is for a sannyasi or for ladies?" I said, "It is for your health." My comment. Larry Mack wanted to offer Prabhupada a gift. I suggested a gold bracelet because I had heard that gold was good for the health. Larry Mack bought an ornately carved 18-carat gold ladies' bracelet. Prabhupada accepted Larry Mack's gift, but he had also commented on the inappropriateness of a sannyasi actually wearing such an ornament. Prabhupada again questioned me about the bracelet when we flew together to Japan. When I told him that it had cost $250 US dollars, he appreciated Larry Mack's sentiment. I heard that the bracelet was eventually melted down and used to make Prabhupada a gold tooth to Larry Mack's eternal benefit. Food for thought. Just before Prabhupada stood up to leave the flower and cloth-covered couch, he asked me a question, referring to the many young Indian boys and girls present. He asked, "Who are the leaders? Call them." I searched the children's innocent faces and pointed. "Lalu, Suresh, Raju, come up." The three boys looked at each other and stood up. Prabhupada gave them each a garland from around his neck. As they were about to sit down, he instructed them to become serious in Krishna consciousness. "Every day," he said, "you should eat one flower from your garland." Prabhupada then left the reception room and went to his room. My heart swelled as the children began spontaneously singing, "Samsara Dava Nalali Raloka." My comment. Eat a flower a day. Prabhupada's request was unique and merciful. If the children followed it, although none did, it would help them remember the most fortunate event of their lives. When I learned of their failure, that they didn't actually do what Prabhupada had requested of them, I was so disappointed that I began to lose hope in the future of their Krishna consciousness. The last remnant of hope finally evaporated during Prabhupada's next visit in 1974. Lalu again attended Prabhupada's lecture, this time at the Hong Kong Hilton. He even danced during the kirtan, and as he danced, a coin, 10 Hong Kong cents, fell from his pocket. I tapped him on the shoulder and suggested he offer it at Prabhupada's feet. Lalu nervously picked it up, refused, and put the coin back in his pocket. Okay, we'll end here. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada was very unique, wasn't he? Hare Krishna.